These are the things that I see in my clients, from going from a controlled environment and being really chaotic with their eating. All of a sudden, they've had surgery. They need that freedom and order.
Understanding, how did you then navigate that balance? How did you find yourself in that first year?
That food is helping them soothe the negative emotions. They just don't know.
When you look at your parents sometimes, and I see it in clients, they're angry. They're angry towards their parents because they felt like there was this level of control, that their parents were strict.
You know, with a lot of my clients, the oxygen mask is on everybody else but themselves, because they feel a guilt, a sense of guilt.
Hi, Van. Thank you for coming to Therapize.
Hi, Lalita. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a long time.
It really has. And just for anyone listening, Van is a dear friend and someone who has such a powerful story that I really want to share today. And just for us to understand more about what you do, Van, and the real sort of like burning fire that you have behind that. So just for everyone listening, what is it that you do?
Gosh, where shall I start? So as you know, I'm Van. I'm an expert bariatric dietitian, and I help women before and after weight loss surgery improve their relationship with food, but really optimize their weight loss by understanding how they need to change their habits and behaviors around food.
Yeah. So you talk about food and you talk about weight loss. And my sort of question to you, and I don't think I've ever asked you, but why? What made you get into this?
Gosh, where shall I start? So Lalita, I think in my younger years, when, gosh, I'm just trying to think of the age, I must have been 7 or 8 years old. I remember my dad putting himself on a diet because he had blood pressure, high blood pressure. And, you know, from our Indian diet of eating chapatis and rice and curry, all of a sudden he was eating so-called English food, you know, boiled fish, vegetables and potatoes. And I was like, oh. So if you change your diet, it could change your health. You know, at that age, we weren't taught about food and its impact on our bodies and health at that sort of age. And so it really got me really thinking. But then also, my older sister struggled with her weight. And this had a huge impact on the kids in the family. So my brother, my younger sister and me, but maybe they were a little bit younger and they probably didn't recognize it. But I was a year younger than my older sister. So I recognized that my dad and mom were like saying no more biscuits, no more cake, no more chocolate. Not that we had very much of those foods because money was quite tight. So all of a sudden food was restricted. All the lovely foods that were really good and luxurious. And I always found that actually, why are we being deprived? And it was all, I became really curious. But then as I grew up, I really grew an interest in food. But I think it was more because I became the caregiver in the family. I became the mom to my younger brother and sister. So I had to learn to cook, clean, do all those household chores. And I know a lot of my clients have a very similar story. So food all of a sudden became everything to me. And then combining that with what my sister was going through with her weight and how my mom and dad were controlling food in our lives, all of a sudden it came to the point where, okay, you've got to think about a career when you grow up. And, you know, the stereotypical Asian idea is doctor, pharmacy, accountant. And I was like, oh, I'm not bright enough to be a doctor. Or so I thought. And I thought, accountant, I'm not good at numbers. Accounting isn't for me. Pharmacy, I did chemistry and I was really good at it. But then when I did it at A level, it was a completely different game. I just didn't quite click with it, but I did really enjoy biology and chemistry. So I remember opening up a careers book and I thought, well, you know, whatever it lands on, I'm going to be that.
Oh,
and
wow.
It landed on dietetics. And that's how I then went on to university to study biology and dietetics and nutrition. And that's how it all started.
So that's so interesting, because if it had landed on something else, I wonder where you'd be right now.
Who knows, Lalita?
That's just really interesting that that's how you managed to make that choice. But sometimes I do believe like everything happens for the right reasons and it does guide you. Like sometimes people ask me about psychology, like, how did you get into it? And I'm just like, I just accidentally ended up down this route. But it just feels like it's the right route. And that's how it feels your journey has been is that you chose to do this, but it really speaks to you based on the story that you've been through.
Absolutely. And, you know, another big reason, and this is going to sound absolutely terrible, why I wanted to leave to go to university. And it wasn't to study. I wanted freedom. Mm. You know, everything was very controlled, you know, for Asians in that era in the 70s. Yeah. Life was very controlled because my parents were first generation Asians. So, you know, food was controlled. I felt nice food was controlled. We couldn't go out, had a really strict upbringing. We weren't allowed to go to friends' houses. Life was about being at home, looking after one another and staying within the community. And I found, I don't know why, but I just felt it was me out of all of the children. I just felt like I wanted to push the boundaries and I wanted to get out of the house because I wanted to experience freedom, and I wanted to experience life. Yeah. And so that was one of my other reasons for wanting to go to university, to eat as much chocolate as I wanted to do, drink alcohol, have fun, have some freedom, but also learn. And I remember the first few weeks or my first year at university, it was pretty much chaos.
Yeah. How was it chaos?
Chaos in the sense that I really felt mentally that I was still a 7-year-old girl. I cried my eyes out, which I think most young girls probably do, for my dad, because, you know, he was such a big figure in my life growing up. So all of a sudden, from having all that control and also chaos in my life with being busy looking after the house, looking after my brother and sister, it was all of a sudden I had this freedom and I just didn't know how to navigate it and make new friends. And it was all really scary. But, you know, these are the things that I see in my clients, from going from a controlled environment, you know, and being really chaotic with their eating. All of a sudden, you know, they need to, after they've had surgery, they need that freedom and order. And that's what I had to create when I went to university. It was like, you can't go out drinking all the time. You can't go out partying. You're here for a reason, but also getting that balance right. And, you know, that was the first year was all very experimental with all of that, because I really didn't know what I was doing, but I knew I had to turn up for lectures and so forth. But it was, it was a really interesting year, that first year, but it was such a year of growth for me, finding myself. And you know what? I'm still finding myself. I don't think that journey ever ends. And I say that to my clients, you know, you may work with me for 6 months or 12 months, but let me tell you, once I let go of your hand, you will still be on a journey. That journey never ends.
And there's something really beautiful that you've just mentioned there about the journey never ending, that we never stop growing. But also this idea of how much control you had, like your parents saying, okay, you need to do this, you need to be like this, you need to do this. So there's so much control there. So how could you develop your sense of self? How could you develop your identity? So when you've gone into this space now where there's no rules, where there's like, I know I need to go into lectures, I know I need to do this, but there's no other rules there. You're trying to find your way of, where are my boundaries? Can I do this? I've got this freedom. I don't know how to use my wings. And what do I do here? Whereas when you were growing up, it's almost like, no, you've got your wings, but you can't use them because you need to do it this way, and you need to do it this way, and you need to do it this way. So you're not really told how to nurture that. And there's loads of reasons for that. There will be loads of different reasons for that. But it's understanding, how did you then navigate that balance? How did you find yourself in that first year?
It's really bizarre, because when you say that, I really relate to my clients and what they're looking for. And it was like, I needed someone to hold my hand. So instantaneously, it was finding other girls who were obviously a similar age to me, but were a step ahead, in the sense that they'd already had freedom. They already were going to parties before they even came to university. They were a bit more worldly than me. And I would latch on to them because I thought, these girls know what they're doing. They're going to help me. And they did. And these girlfriends are still my girlfriends today. We meet up regularly. You know, there's 3 or 4 of them that I'm really close to. But they really did show me the way about, actually, you know, we can go. I hadn't even eaten out.
Yeah,
I hadn't even eaten out at a restaurant, and I just didn't even know how to order food. It was just a completely new experience. So, you know, my life was very controlled and restricted, and then all of a sudden having this freedom. But it was like, I needed a mentor, and these girlfriends became a mentor to me.
How did you know that you wanted freedom? Because when you're in a space like that, it's almost like there's a part of you, when you're speaking, you're saying that you wanted freedom. But how did you know that there was freedom and there was another way of living? Because when you're in that space of control, how did you know that there was another way here?
Because I had a mixture of friends. I think a lot of Asian people, when they're growing up at school, they have a lot of Asian friends. But I predominantly had lots of white friends and a handful of Asian friends. So all my white friends were going out. They were allowed to go to each other's homes. They would invite me to parties and things. And actually, a lot of my Asian friends did as well. Mm. So I knew my life was very different. And each time I asked my dad, oh, can I go to this party? Can I do this? And it was always a no. But, you know, I fully now understand why he did that. And it wasn't the fact that he wanted to control us. It's because mum and dad worked full time. They were tired. They were exhausted. They didn't have the energy to be entertaining other children at our home or dropping us off and collecting us. So I really understand it now. But when I was younger, I was just like, gosh, why are they so strict? You know, why are they doing this? It was a lot of whys. And I think those whys were what pushed the boundaries to me wanting to find that freedom. And so when I'm talking to my clients, I understand that, you know, what I was fighting for as a youngster is what they're fighting for now. They're fighting for food freedom. And I feel I was fighting just for general freedom. Yeah. I just wanted that control lifted so I could be a grown up and do what I wanted. And then you realize when you're a grown up, actually, it's not that exciting. Because with being grown up, there's a lot of responsibility. And, you know, we always think the grass is greener on the other side, right?
Yeah. And you said, and you hit on something really beautiful about parents. And when you look at your parents sometimes, and I see in clients, they're angry. They're angry towards their parents because they felt like there was this level of control, that their parents were strict. But actually, when you understand, that for me is like the key thing in that is like when you take that time to understand like their journey and what they've been through, it doesn't make it go away, but it gives you that, I get it. I get where they're coming from, why they did what they did. And it gives you that sense of peace, but also helps you to regulate the anger, because underneath the anger, there'll be so many more emotions going on that are there to process through. But helping you understand the story of your parents and where they've come from and their journey and their traumas, it just gives you more insight into understanding how you then can relate to them and set boundaries and look after yourself.
Completely agree with everything that you have just said there. And just as you were saying that, you know, my clients in my coaching have made me understand, because probably about 5 or 8 years ago, I was probably still very angry at my parents, and not angry in an aggressive way, but just really, I just didn't understand why they did that. Why did they control life when I know a lot of my friends had freedom? And it came from a protective element.
Yeah.
Not from, you know, they wanted to protect us because of what they'd seen, you know, when they were sort of growing up, I suppose, and they wanted to hold on to their culture.
Yeah.
And each time I speak to one of my clients, and I think that really did help me actually forgive them and fully understand why they were doing this. So, you know, when we coach and we're helping our clients, we're also learning from them as well. Yeah, and it's such a beautiful process, isn't it?
Yeah. And even as a therapist, like when I'm working with clients, we do our own inner work as well. Like, yes, when we're working with clients, we're working there. But away from that, we can reflect on how has that made us feel? What's going on for us? And that's where our growth happens, in supervision or in reflective sessions. And we never stop growing. And that's what I love about this work that we do is there's so much like deep diving work and really sitting with people in like the deepest emotions where many people in everyday life will run away from because they're like, oh, this, I don't know what to do with this. But really sitting with someone in their darkest moments, and rather than trying to fix it, it's like, let's just understand where this is coming from and what's going on here. I think that's just something really beautiful. And maybe it connects with our inner child as well, where we feel like once upon a time, we never got that. And now we're able to then support people because we now have the tools to be able to manage and our emotions, and we can give that to other people now. Is that how you feel?
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree there, because, you know, as you were just, you know, going through that process, I was thinking of actually when I first started out as a dietitian, I said, I don't want to work in weight loss. Mm-hmm. And they said, why? And I said, well, you know, it's really boring. Eat less, move more. And anybody can do that. I want to do something that's going to save people's lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that was my father, you know, be a doctor, do something really useful. And although, you know, I was the only child that went and worked in a hospital, he was really proud of that. But there was also this inner voice that I could hear him saying, do something that's going to really help people. You know, you're going to be saving lives. And I thought, oh, I'll be a kidney dietitian, because when I was doing my training, I realized how important diet was, because if they didn't follow the diet, they would pretty much die. You know, and even if they were on dialysis, they had to follow a very strict diet in that time. And that was many moons ago, to survive. And so I did that initially. And then actually I did that. And then I'd done it for quite a few years. And, you know, as dialysis got better, I was treating people to help them lose weight. And I was thinking, hang on, I didn't come here for this. But then one day I went to a talk, and it was about bariatric surgery. I was like, wow, what is this? And I was just so overwhelmed with all the information and this, the problem with obesity and how surgery was fixing this problem. I thought, I need to find out more about this. And then a year later, I was in a job, and that was me doing bariatrics. And what I realized was, actually, this is more about eating less and moving more. And so here we are today, having this conversation about weight loss, surgery, coaching, relationship with food, emotions and feelings. There's so much to it, because, you know, I think a lot of people think weight loss surgery is a quick fix. And, you know, part of me wishes that it was, because it would solve so many problems, but it's a tool. It does about 30% of the work, helping control portion sizes, but that's only if the patient follows the rules. And if you think about the type of men and women, and it is mainly women that has bariatric surgery, most of them have been struggling with their weight since childhood. And I get women from that have memories from age 4, 5, and 6 being told that they've got to go on a diet. I think I had a conversation this week with a lady who was fat shamed at the age of about 7 by the headmaster in front of a group of pupils, and we were talking that through. And it's, you know, they've had problems with their food and their weight, but for such a young age, and then they've been dieting all their life, which then really messes up their metabolic health. And as a result, as they get older and going through the hormonal changes, as we do as women, their weight loss is pretty much impossible. And that's where weight loss surgery sort of comes in and helps sort of change the metabolic effect of how your body is working. And also restrict food, because that's what they want. They think food is the enemy. The less I eat, the better it is. And these people are so scared of food. And it is actually really sad, because I come along and say, stop counting calories, stop weighing your food. I just want you to look at your plate and think, oh, that's such a great balance of food. And that if I eat this food, it's going to make me feel good. And I'm all about the feelings rather than the numbers on the scale. And it's really, it's hard work to get someone to change from weighing and looking at the number on the scale to actually, how are you feeling? How are you feeling this week? But feelings are so important, because they think the journey is just about the number on the scale. And then they come to work with me, and a lot of the times we don't even talk about food. We're talking about feelings, emotions, what's going on in your life, and how is that affecting your weight loss, rather than what have you eaten?
It really feels like you help people to heal their relationship with themselves. So if we think of, like, from a young age, if you said someone at the age of 7 being fat shamed, instantly what happens to that child? What beliefs does that child take on board about themselves, about the world, about the others? And how does that then continue to play out? But also they get to this point where then food and their relationship with food, and by them eating or not eating, how does that impact then their bodily and what's going on inside the body? And it's almost like they come to you and they have the surgery, but then you help them with so much more. You deep dive into their relationship with themselves and helping them to make sense of, like, who am I, or what are these limiting beliefs that might stop me? What are the beliefs that impact my food? That's really beautiful work, Ryan.
Oh, thank you. But it is. It's such a huge part of the journey. Yeah. So, you know, the tool is going to help control the volume of food that they eat. But like I said, it all depends on the texture of the food, and that they've got to follow these eating techniques and so forth. But the reality is that 70% is the work that they do and that they do with me and their relationship with food. Because you don't just wake up one day and say to yourself, I'm going to have surgery today to help me lose weight, because I've tried every diet under the sun and it's hard work. Women spend years And then they have surgery, they keep it a secret. But again, that adds another double-edged sword to the equation because they can't tell anybody that they've had surgery because they feel so embarrassed. They feel that they don't want to be judged and criticized. It's like they've become that little girl again.
Look at the shame, though, as well, attached to that. The shame carried round of what are people going to be thinking about this? And that this secrecy, like even the food side, it says there's a secrecy there. And then feeling like, oh, I'm going to be doing something to help myself, but I can't tell anyone because what are they going to think? Or I don't want them to judge me in a bad way. It's really sad, isn't it? That we can be living life, moving forwards, trying to do different things. But in the back of your head, you've got that, what if, what if, what if, what if? And that stops you from showing up authentically and just allowing yourself to be the way that you want to be.
Oh, you said that so well there. You really did. But it's so true. These people feel that they've got to act a certain way. So when they're in public, they'll be eating a salad. Then at home, maybe even possibly secretly, they're having a donut because they feel they can't be seen to be eating a donut because they're overweight and they're struggling. It makes them feel really, they're ashamed. But it's all those food rules that they've grown up with, that there's good food and there's bad food. And I always come around and say, actually, there's no bad food, because if a starving child in Africa is given a McDonald's, you know, me as a dietitian would turn and say, oh, that's bad, you mustn't eat that. I'd be like, enjoy it, because you may not get any more food for the next day or two. Everything is relative. And I think a lot of these women keep it a secret because they are still very worried that this surgery isn't going to work. And, you know, there is a high rate of people regaining weight. In fact, that is my number one inquiry. Regaining weight after having weight loss surgery. And a lot of people, when they're thinking about surgery, thinking, how can that happen? Because I've got a small stomach. How can I out-eat that stomach? And it's not about out-eating. It's about the type of foods that are eating. So it's all the foods that they consider bad. They're eating in secret. They've found a way to work around the surgery so they can eat more. And there's so many ways you can do that. And there's something that we call slider foods. So they're things like chocolate, crisps, biscuits, cake, ice cream, that don't take up much space in your stomach. You can still eat them. Now, a lot of the procedures can make you feel unwell. And so people rely on that. But not everybody will feel unwell with dumping syndrome. So dumping syndrome is when you eat something sugary, fatty, or something with a lot of caffeine in, and it drops your blood sugar. So you feel really weak. You might feel lethargic, might get stomach ache. And you have to sort of just lie down and ride it out. And then you know, gosh, I can't eat that food again. But the willingness to eat a desired food overrides the feeling of that fear of that having that dumping syndrome. And so it's like, oh, I'm going to eat it and I'll just know that I'm going to feel unwell. And then the pattern of doing that keeps repeating. It's because that food is helping them soothe the negative emotion. They just don't know how to break that down, that emotion, and deal with it. And
so would you say, Van, it's the emotions that then impact the food? Like, is it something might happen, and then it's the emotions, and then the emotions lead them to the food and what they do with the food?
Yeah. So you know, there'll be a trigger. Let's say you and I work together, and I came in and I said, oh, Lalita, you know, what's happened to you? Your dress, it's looking a bit tight today. Now, the likelihood is, if you've been struggling with your weight, that's going to really upset you. But sometimes people don't have a filter, or they say it thinking it's going to help you. You know, oh, that'll kick her back into the game of dieting again. And the thing is, you might get home, or you might go off and be really upset. And because of whatever experience you've experienced in life, you won't turn around to that person and say, well, actually, I have gained a few weight. A few pounds, but it's because I'm pregnant or I'm due on or whatever it is, whatever the reason is. They don't know how to tell that person, actually really upset me. They don't want to do that. But what they'll do is they'll eat their feelings. They'll do everything but speak to that person or tell somebody, because they don't know how to deal with their emotions.
Is there something about you're so busy looking after everyone else that you haven't learned to look after yourself? And as a result of that, you end up then just eating your emotions by suppressing them away.
Absolutely. And I call this the oxygen mask scenario. So, you know, we're all guilty of it, aren't we? We're especially as mothers, we look after everybody.
Yeah.
And then we put ourselves last. But it's like when you go on the plane, They always say to the adult, put the oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on the child. And, you know, with a lot of my clients, the oxygen mask is on everybody else but themselves, because they feel a sense of guilt to themselves as the priority. So that means they may not make time to eat regularly. They may be, you know, looking after their children, and so they haven't got time to have their snack or prioritize their health or go to the gym. You know, life is busy. They're working full-time mums, then they come home looking after the children, taking them to, you know, events and parties, etc. So, you know, it's really difficult at times, but it's about actually, if you can prioritize just looking after yourself during the day when you're not with the kids, which may mean a bit of planning and organization, then, you know, even a couple of hours in the evening isn't so bad. But I think they feel it's like disorganized chaos. You know, at the beginning I said, you know, a lot of these people have a lot of chaos and control in their life. And that's probably how it is for most of the day. Until
what I also see as well, like in people that take on the caregiver role, is that they don't know how to. They are so used to living outside in, so focused on everyone else. So when you say take time for yourself, they're like, and what do I do in that? So I have clients who they'll come in as people pleasers and so focused on everyone else, over responsible, very hyper aware of everyone else's needs. But then when you ask them, well, what do you want to do? It's like, I don't know. Like, what do you like doing? I don't know. Like, what are your hobbies? What are you in? Like, they've never had that space to nurture that part of them. So when you are saying, oh, like, do this or have time for yourself, we can say like, yeah, just have time for yourself and make sure you give yourself that time out. And they're like, what do I do in that? And that's why I think people get stuck in the people pleasing, because they're good at it. They know how to do it. So then when they're coming back and stepping in and giving time for themselves, it becomes like, but I don't know the rules. I don't know what to do. And that can feel like very stressful and quite panicky. But people, if they've got this time and they're like, I don't know how to use it.
Yeah. And I think that's because, like you said, if you've been a caregiver from such a young age, you've not had a chance to have fun. And I really understand that. I really do understand that, because you've spent most of your time cooking, cleaning, you know, caring for others, that, you know, you grow up with that and you'll continue to be a people pleaser and a caregiver. But all of a sudden, when it comes to making yourself the priority and putting that oxygen mask on, and you ask the client, say, so what makes you happy? What's fun? And it's like a blank, I don't know. And it's finding that. How can I have fun? How can I make time for myself? How can I give myself some self-care? So a lot of these women get very paranoid about eating in the evening. But that's their self-care. That's their self-care time. Put the kids to bed, put a movie on, watch a bit of TV, and then the habit is, I'll have some popcorn, I'll have a bar of chocolate, I'll have a drink, because that is their quiet time. But how about, instead of doing that, you go up and you run yourself a nice bath, watch a movie, read a book, you know, make some time for you.
And I think you said it really beautifully. It's a habit, isn't it? So people get so used to, okay, finally, kids are down. Okay, now I can breathe. Let me just have some chocolate now. Or let me go and have the... And then you start thinking, oh, but there's this in the fridge, or there's this in... And then you naturally just start doing it, because you're almost like on that autopilot of like trying to soothe yourself. But when you really sit in them emotions and think, okay, I'm now a little bit bored. I'm perhaps lonely. I'm don't know what to do with myself. So instead of not or suppressing them emotions again and turning to food, it's also embracing them emotions and starting to notice, what am I feeling right now? Why is my behavior or my mind wandering to food right now? Where is that going and what's happening there? Because when you're understanding these patterns and what comes up, it then means that, okay, there's another route, which is I can run a bath, or I can do something else, or what else is there for me to do? So you start to become more aware of there's another way, but I am learning to understand what my body is trying to say to me, and what my instinct has always been, but I'm trying to break away from that. Introducing our exclusive newsletter, your weekly dose of inspiration, insights, and empowerment. Each week, we deliver curated content straight to your inbox. And this is designed to help you navigate life's challenges and thrive. Join our community of like-minded individuals who are committed to personal growth and self-discovery. Subscribe now to start your journey towards a happier, more fulfilling life. Don't miss out.
Yeah, they're really scared of their feelings. And in fact, they don't even realize that they have these feelings, and they just have no idea how to cope with them. But all they know is whatever they're feeling makes them feel bad. And the solution is, if I sit down and have a bar of chocolate or a packet of crisps or some cake or ice cream, I'll feel better. And then they do for that moment. And then it's like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be on a diet. I shouldn't be doing that. And this is where the food rules come in, and all the years of doing Weight Watchers and Slimming World, you know, counting your points, and, you know, you're allowed so many sins, and, you know, it's literally part of their genetics. And all of these myths, emotions, the connections with food, the triggers, they all have to be unbuckled. They really do. And just having that awareness of why they're doing it is such a great starting point for them, because they're just unaware, and just having that awareness. And, you know, a lot of the women that I work with, their busy time is what they're fighting. So time to eat. So they eat mindlessly. I had somebody that I spoke to yesterday driving home and eating on the way home. And, you know, when you're focused on driving, your brain isn't connecting the fact that you've eaten and then wanting to eat as soon as you get home, because the brain hasn't recognized the fact that you've eaten, because all it's known is that you're driving home, because it wants to make sure you get home safely. That's the priority. It's not thinking about, oh, how does that rice cake and peanut butter taste like? It's not going to think about that. Whereas if you make time to eat mindfully, which is so difficult for a lot of the women that I work with, and they have to when they have weight loss surgery, making time to slow down, actually get more in tune with their hunger and fullness, it's an alien feeling to them. But the beauty of the surgeries is that it will make you feel very uncomfortable if you don't slow down, if you don't chew your food and taste it and give yourself a good 15 to 20 minutes. There's so many rules that go with the surgery, and it's such a shame that there is, but you have to make that patient safe, because it's like having another set of diet rules. And I think that's what a lot of the women that I work with feel like. I had this surgery because I wanted to stop dieting, and I didn't want any more rules. And now I'm being given another set of rules, and I'll say, well, actually, they're not rules in a sense. It's a way of living with your new surgery, your smaller stomach pouch. And it's for them to then understand that they've got to do this. But if you think about it, they have to be, a lot of these women will pay a company or go abroad and be unaware of all of the things that they need to do to make this surgery work. They're just expecting this surgery to do all the work. And it is, you have this honeymoon period where it feels like, I call it the all singing and dancing mode, where it feels like the surgery is doing all the work for you. They don't, their cravings aren't there. They can't eat very much. And it's like they're sticking to all the rules. And then all of a sudden, it's just like a brand new car, isn't it? When you buy a brand new car, you drive it correctly. You keep it all clean. Give it 6 months. You're honking that horn. There's dirty sweet wrappers in the car. It's not as new. It's the same with the surgery. It's got a honeymoon period. And once that honeymoon period starts to go, all of a sudden, they'll find that they're feeling a bit hungry. Their old habits are starting to creep back in. They're eating quickly again.
Yeah.
And then they become frustrated because they have more weight stores. They start to regain the weight. And they're like, oh, even surgery isn't working for me. And, you know, really what they need to work on are their habits and their behaviors and their relationship with food.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult doing that when you're a caregiver.
Van, what's the number two, like the top two reasons why people end up having the surgery?
Oh, gosh. Top two. The reasons that I hear are they've been dieting for so many years and nothing's working.
Okay.
Then the other end of the spectrum, I'm finding more and more menopausal women going to have surgery because they have struggled with their weight. They've been able to stay within a healthy range. And then all of a sudden, perimenopause hits and boom, the hormones. They're doing whatever they were doing before.
Yeah.
And
so what does the surgery actually do? Like what, because you talk about they stop their cravings, but what does the surgery actually do?
So there's two parts to the surgery. So one is the stomach size has changed. So there's three different procedures. There's a gastric band, there's a gastric sleeve, and there's a gastric bypass. And there are some other procedures, but these are the top three procedures. The gastric band, I'm not going to talk about, we don't really do them anymore. They've had their shelf life. Some surgeons still do them, but don't do them very often. But the sleeve and the bypass, what happens is when you have a gastric sleeve, you're having 80% of your stomach removed.
Oh, wow.
And I always say to my ladies that, you know, your intuition is in your gut. So you're losing 80% of your intuition. So this is with the bypass as well.
Oh, wow.
So And the reason why is because they don't trust their intuition, because mm-hmm. their diets have told them when they should eat, how much they should eat, and that detects whether they're full or not. So they might still be hungry after having that meal of 250 calories, but it doesn't matter because that's what your allocation is, 250 calories. So mm-hmm. when you're on a diet, it takes away your intuition.
Mm.
So when they're having surgery, they're having 80% of their intuition taken away, in a sense. It's never yeah. seen as that, but it's something that I tell my ladies, because that means we need to work with the 20% of intuition that you've got there, because yeah. you will need to recognize when you are full. We're not counting calories. We're using a plate to control your portions. So that's the sleeve. And it also, there's a hormonal effect with both procedures where you don't produce so much hunger hormone.
Mm.
And that is the beauty of it. And that's how the surgery works. With gastric bypass, there's a bit more of a metabolic effect from it. And what I mean by that, so people that have pre-diabetes or diabetes, it can help put that in remission.
Yeah.
So a lot of women or men may have surgery because they've got a lot of health issues and yeah. they've been dieting for so long, or they need a further surgery for something else. And the surgeon or the doctor has said, you've got to lose weight. And because they have tried for so long, they might consider surgery, or it might be recommended.
And from your opinion, people that have the surgery, do you find that they are able to long-term keep the weight off?
That's a really good question. We know over 50% of the patients will put the weight back on, and it's unfortunate. And it does. I know it's really sad, but it's usually the people that haven't had any support.
When you say support, what do you mean support? Like what sort of support?
They're coming to someone like me to work with me, or a dietitian, having therapy, when they've had absolutely no support how to actually use their tool correctly. Support isn't about giving you a diet plan.
Yeah.
And here you go. Here's an A4 sheet of paper to tell you how to work with your surgery. It isn't. A lot of the women, and possibly the men, will have emotional eating. They'll have a poor relationship with food, and the relationship, we've not operated on your brain, we've operated on your stomach. So that needs to be dealt with. And that's why a lot of people will put the weight back on. But look, there's some people that are genuinely lucky. And I would say that women that have surgery, and the reason why I'm saying women more is because that's what I work with. And it is mainly women that have weight loss surgery. There are men, but my clients are mainly women. Women in general will have, if they're younger, they may not have so many issues with their metabolism, because they've, let's say if a 20-year-old has surgery, and 20-year-olds do have surgery, they've had less number of years of dieting, so they haven't affected their metabolic health so much. Yeah. Whereas someone that's in their 50s, or maybe even approaching 60, or even in their 40s, they've probably got 20 or 30 years of dieting inside of them, which has affected their metabolic health, but it's also affected them mentally. So their weight loss may be a lot slower. They may not even get to the results that they want. Whereas the 20-year-old that's probably been dieting for about 5 years will probably lose weight very quickly, may not have so many emotional needs that need addressing, and will probably get a better result. But with the older women, well, I just think, well, if you've had a lot of years of dieting, then the surgery is going to be that tool that's going to help you, but you're going to have lots of emotional needs and habits and behaviors that need to be managed. When I look at weight loss, I'm not looking at just the nutrition. I'm looking at their relationship with food. I'm looking at exercise and movement. I'm looking at stress, sleep, hormones, how they're eating, because a lot of these women have something called insulin resistance. And that is where they're sort of, they don't have diabetes, but they need more of the hormone insulin to bring their blood sugars down. Now, insulin is a life-saving hormone, but it also stores energy that helps you store fat. So how you eat after you have surgery is so important too.
You're so insightful with all of this. And it's a shame that people don't realize the impact. Like it's like you've got a wound and you just put plaster over it without actually understanding what it is. And it's like, oh, it's sorted now. The plaster's there. But actually underneath, it can be getting worse, or it can be getting infected if we're not looking after it. And it feels like when people have the surgery, they think, oh, the surgery is going to cure it. But actually, that's part of it. Like you said, it's a tool. But behind that, there's so much more, which is a very holistic model you use and focusing on all aspects of life. But it is a lifestyle change. And a lifestyle change means really learning to sit in these emotions, which sound like people aren't aware that they have, that fuel them into their eating habits.
Absolutely. And, you know, like I said, you've got to look at, you know, stress. People, you know, stress is a fight and flight response, isn't it? And the thing is, with that hormone cortisol, it's there for a reason. You know, our brain is still very primitive. So if we are in a high stress situation, which a lot of us are, a lot of the time with work pressures, family pressures, financial pressures, well, then, you know, if your answer to that problem is, oh, I'll eat something to make myself better, then the reason why you do that is because that is actually one solution to your problem, right? Because because our brain is primitive, it's thinking, gosh, there may not be any food around for a long time. So actually, it will make you crave sugar. It doesn't realize there's a Tesco's down the road or a Waitrose or an Aldi, wherever you shop, where you can get some food. It's still thinking that you need to make sure you are safe and you need energy. And in order to get that, it's going to make you crave sugar. So, you know, and so you're going to eat it. You're going to want it. So a lot, you know, so just even managing stress. It's so helpful for these patients. There's so much
understanding, isn't there? Like when we understand things, I know the way my brain works. And even when I work with clients, a lot of the time, the things that we don't know, we don't know. But as soon as we start connecting the dots, things start to make sense. We see the picture and we're like, ah, that's what that is. So the next time you're in a situation like that, you have that space to be like, I know what this is about. And you might fall down in that space, but that doesn't mean that you're going backwards. It doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. It means, I realize now why this has happened, rather than falling down and being so subconscious and then getting back up and just getting into this sort of like very high functioning, go, 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 next thing, next thing. But actually being more present and reflective and learning to sit and understand what's going on rather than go, 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 next thing. Because being a caregiver, that's what happens. You're always on to the next thing, looking after everyone else and not coming from the inside. And that's what you're really learning is the power of pause. And that's been the big thing of my journey. And I know in your journey as well is that power of pause and coming back to self and learning to be in that self, understanding what do you need here?
Yeah. And when you haven't got time, you've not got time to pause. And, you know, mindfulness is such a beautiful thing that we all need to take stock of, especially the ladies that I work with. But yes, stress is a huge, and it's not just, you know, it's not just there's emotional stress, there's physical stress, there's nutritional stress. And I always tell my clients that, you know, we don't want any of those stresses. And they're like, well, what causes what? And I said, nutritional stress. You're not eating enough. But I've just had weight loss surgery so that I don't eat very much. And they go, yes, you've got a smaller stomach, but we need to be really mindful of how we fill that stomach pouch.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Then there's emotional stress, which is all about emotional eating, your relationship with food. So we need to try and manage that as well. Then there's physical stress. All of a sudden, somebody that hasn't properly exercised or been to the gym consistently for the last 20 years, they've had surgery and they're at the gym five times a day, maybe even twice a day. Oh, now that's physical stress.
Yeah.
So when you put the three together, it's the fireworks are going to go off. You're not going to move anywhere. You're going to be at a stall or you're going to start to regain because your body is there to protect you. It's a survival mechanism.
There's
you
know, so much about self-compassion there as well, isn't there? Because you can go from black to white, where here you're not doing anything for yourself. And then you go into this side and like you're doing over for yourself, but that can also be damaging. So it's like you said right at the beginning of this is trying to find that balance and people learning to dance through life. And it's not that right, we have the rules and that's the way the rules are going to be, because it's an ongoing journey.
Oh, absolutely. And when you just said that the black and the white, you know, the all or nothing, you know, that's the dieting mindset. I'm either on a diet or I'm in binge mode. I was going to swear then, but I won't. You know, and it is, it's all or nothing. It's all or nothing. You know, I call it, I'm going to say it, pocket mode. You know, you're being so good, best behavior, being the good girl. I'm eating my perfect diet. And then it just gets too much. Boom. There's the bar of chocolate. That's the ice cream. And what I always say is, right, we're going to try and find the gray in the black and the white. And people are like, what do you mean? I go, well, how would it feel if you had some ice cream? Am I allowed to? I go, you tell me, do you want to eat ice cream? Love to. I said, all right, look, let's write down some foods that we're going to challenge you with. And oh no, I can't eat that because if I eat that, I'm going to put weight on. Well, not if you eat a small bowl of ice cream once a week or once a fortnight. No, it's not. So it's like the journey is about creating balance, which is where the food freedom comes in.
I also hear when you're talking to clients there, it's almost like that little girl who went to university and had the freedom and it was like, yeah, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And it's like, there was this mold of like, yep, okay, controlled diets, do this, do this. And then you go into a space where there's so much freedom. And when that freedom, it's like trying to find that balance. And in some ways, that it sounds like that's what you're doing with your clients, is they have this strict way of being with the food and with diets. And diets itself can be like very controlled. I need to just eat this. I need to just do this. I can't just do this. And then you move into the other space, which is like, okay, I now need to find this right balance. And it sounds like that's what you help people to do, is like, it's okay to have ice cream. It's okay to have chocolate, but in small portions, and look at how you're having it and when you're having it.
And the balance of how you eat it, because we want to avoid those blood sugar spikes. But it's like going from that control and chaos, you know, the dieting and then the binging, to having some order and freedom. And it can be really difficult for somebody to grasp that concept, but it is that is pretty much where I'm taking them from being so controlled and restricted with their food, but then also then they're going into this phase of binging or overeating. And sometimes a binge isn't a binge for them. It might be that they've had two small Kit Kat bars. I've had a binge. That is not a binge.
Yeah.
A binge is when you keep eating and you make yourself really uncomfortable. Now I do have women that do that too.
Do you think there's guilt as well attached to it? Like people have, because I know sometimes I do it. I'll eat like chocolate, or I'll eat something and it's like, oh, I've had a bad day now because I've had all this junk. But I know, like, if I don't have my foundations in place, like I know I haven't done my movement, or I didn't go out for the run that I knew I wanted to, I can feel all out of place and out of sync. So I know how important routine and structure is in my life. And I wonder if you see that in your clients.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what it's about. It's about being consistent.
Yeah.
And this is what they struggle with a lot. And I said, look, we need to get, and that's why I say we have to get the foundations right.
Yeah.
So let's get your food good. Let's get your hydration. Let's get your sleep and your stress. If we can get those foundations right, then let's start adding things in. Because I'm all about, you know, someone will say, really fancy a bar of chocolate. And I'm like, well, what can we add with that bar of chocolate to make it a better choice? You know, so I might say have some cheese before you have the chocolate, to help balance your blood sugars. You know, a really fancy pizza, or pizza's bad for me, you know. I'll say, well, no, it's not really bad, because you've got some carbs there, you've got some protein, got some vegetables on there. But what can you do to make it a better choice? And they'll look at me blank and go, how about adding some salad to it? Oh, never thought of that. So rather than removing food, I'm all about actually, what can we add in to make it a better choice for you?
Yeah. That's really powerful. It's just showing a different way of looking at things. It's like sometimes people will do things in a set way and it's like, but I've always done it. And you're like, but there is this that you could do. And they're like, oh yeah, I didn't think of that. But that these are tools that you're giving them now for their future, which again, you're showing them this is the way that you can do things. Almost like these are your wings, like go, like, so there's not that dependency on only you're the expert and you know best. You're teaching them to be the expert of themselves and how to like use food and sit in their emotions, and very holistic in seeing
you've been through my membership, because that is right at the bit when I'm talking about creating a positive mindset. It is all about becoming the expert of them, being their own expert. And that's so important, but that's their intuition. You know, something that they've neglected from all these diets that they've followed. Actually, how does that food make you feel? Don't really feel great after that. Well, okay, maybe you don't want to be eating so much of that food. But how does this meal make you feel, or this snack? Felt really good after that, right? We need to have more of that in your diet. So, you know, there's no one size fits all for these patients. Everything has to be personalized. It really does, especially when they're emotional eaters. But look, we're all emotional eaters.
Yeah.
I remember at university using, my thing was, I don't know if they still get them actually, Lita, chocolate hobnobs.
Yeah, you could sit still there. Have them. They're lovely.
I know, but I wouldn't have one. I would eat a whole packet of them because I felt lonely. I felt scared. Yeah. You know, it was like, that's what I wanted at home that we weren't allowed to have, you know. And it was like, it just comforted me.
Yeah.
You know, so that was one of my things when I was a teenager at university, because I did sort of struggle with my weight. And then I used to look at all my friends and they were wearing all these nice outfits. And I'm thinking, but it wasn't, now I look back, I wasn't overweight. I was just a little bit chubby. You know, everybody else was probably a size 8 and I was probably about a 10 or a 12, which is a normal size. But
what do you think you saw? Why do you think you struggled with your weight from like the things that you've been through?
I think it's more because food was restricted. And I felt deprived. And it was like, just because she's overweight, now we can't eat the biscuits and we can't have this. And I just remember that also, I think emotional eating and issues with our finances are so interconnected, weight and all.
And
we didn't have very much money when we were younger. So, you know, kids would have spending money. We didn't. So, you know, every day or every Friday, the children would go into the tuck shop or they would go to the corner shop on the way back home. I couldn't do it. And sometimes I would just, you know, I'd wait for my friends to go to the shop and I would just be like, oh, I hope one of them gives me a sweet, you know. And then my mum would come home and she'd buy some sweets from the market. Yeah. And generally they would be off or out of date or they would have melted in the heat and you'd be eating them thinking these are disgusting. But you would eat them because that's all you had. I remember, and plus there was four of us. So, you know, if there's a small bag of sweets, there's not many to go around. So I remember as a little kid, I would grab probably four sweets, run into the garden. I would climb the apple tree and just sit up there, just enjoying these sweets. And you know what? That was my mindful eating, just sitting there in the apple tree, seeing the world go by, just enjoying those sweets. But, you know, now I look back, it might have been a panicked response when I was younger. It was just such a lovely moment when I look back and thinking, I had no worries in the world. I would just be there sitting, eating my sweets. You know, and we had probably had them once a month, once every 2 months. So I think for me, food was so controlled and restricted when we were younger because it was more to do with finances than my sister probably struggling her weight. But, you know, I wanted to eat sweets. I remember service stations. So, you know, in those days, you could pack about 10 people in a car because you'd sit in the boot as well. And I remember sitting in the car in the boot thinking, I hope my dad stops at every service station because all I want him to get me is a packet of sweets. That's all I wanted, or a packet of crisps. He never did. So, you know, my goal in life was to just stop at a service station when I grow up. And do I do that? Absolutely not, because now I fully understand why my dad wouldn't stop, because it adds on a lot of time to your journey. So, you know, but when you're a youngster, you see things so differently. But what's really important is you start to understand why your parents did that, because I think that gives you, it really does help you sort of heal.
I think it gives your inner child that peace, because your inner child is like, oh, dad never stopped. What's wrong with me? Am I not good enough? Am I not worthy? Does he not see me? And you can then end up, your inner child can then end up taking these emotions and these beliefs, thinking that you're not enough. And then as you grow into your adult self, you then start to feel like, oh, but I'm not enough and I'm not deserving. I don't take up space. I don't want to be a burden. And that then plays out in your adult life, in making decisions financially and business, in work with friends, because you're still that sort of like caregiver of like, let me look after everyone else, because you struggle to take up that space. So it can be incidences like this that have happened where the little girl within us is holding on to these beliefs. But that's why when you understand from your adult view, it's almost like your adult has space to almost like reflect back to this young child that dad didn't do that because he didn't love you. Dad didn't do that because you weren't enough. Dad didn't do that because of this. Actually, dad did this because of this and this and this. So you've got that insight and understanding and that yearning that's going on from your inner child. It's almost like going back and having like real sit down moments with this younger version of you and being able to regulate through these emotions. So you become more authentic in your adult self, become more visible, able to take up this space without feeling guilty and bad. It becomes this integration in life, which is so beautiful and part of our healing.
Absolutely. Because if we don't, we are such angry people. And I see it in my clients and I'll say, look, I'm going to give you a reality pill here. You are so angry, but I really want you to see it from your parents' perspective, why they may have done this. Okay. And then we reel through them and they're like, I never thought of it like that. You know, and it's such a beautiful moment when they do, because all of a sudden it's like they're making peace with themselves. You know, there are situations that are very bad, and obviously maybe, you know, healing isn't the right time for that person, and whatever's happened in their childhood, you know, I'm not probably the person that they need to be speaking to. Maybe they need to speak to someone like you. However, for a lot of the women, it is all about, you know, mum did this, or, and a lot of the women that I work with, their mum struggled with their weight and a lot of what their mum did. And they judged their child and criticized and controlled the food. And it's, you know, and it's destroyed the relationship with that parent. But, you know, you come along and you have these conversations to help heal that.
Yeah. And it's like you said as well, it's like when you look back, there's a different perception that your inner child has. And it's not saying that your inner child is wrong in any way, but like when you ran off with the sweets and was like, I'm going to get to this tree. It's like, you can understand that maybe that was a panicked way, but it was also very beautiful as well. But if you keep holding on to, but I had to do this and it was because the food was restricted and because of it, we can feel very angry. We blame everyone else around us. We think that everyone else is, it's their fault I'm like this. But sometimes we have to learn to take that accountability. And that's hard. That is really hard to step into that because it means you have to face yourself. It means you have to start looking within yourself. It's no longer, oh, it's because of them, I'm here. It's because of them, I'm here. It's like, no, this is now you step into that space and be like, yeah, these things have happened, but I have to take this accountability now. I have to be the one who is holding my inner child and being like, come on, we've got this. And it's hard, but when you start doing it, you start realizing actually there's nothing here to be fearful of. Everything is, like you said, is that relationship with self. And the more that we understand that relationship with self and have the right tools, we navigate life. And it's not saying life's going to be easy. Things do come up and we have sit down moments and reflective moments to understand what's going on.
Yeah. You know, all I can say there is just understanding the process, just understanding, because, you know, it is like I look back and I think my dad was protecting us. Who is trying to put up, you know, we had our curry and chapatis, you know, as far as he was concerned, he was looking after his family, you know, but because we're exposed to this westernized world and we see other people having sweets, we see what's going on. And that's where we think, actually, I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind doing this and that. And that's where I think, like I said at the beginning, that's where my experience with I want freedom because I want to do this and I want to do that. And I want to have a try at this.
And Van, if there is someone struggling now with their weight, or if they are noticing that they are a caregiver and they realize that they have this relationship with food that they want to change, what's one piece of advice that you would give to them?
Oh, gosh, make time for self-care. Journal, maybe journal as well, because, you know, sometimes we find it really difficult to put it into words when we're speaking. Or we feel embarrassed. But when we write it down, it's such a difference because it's private. The emotions start flooding and you might think you're writing a whole load of nonsense and you may not even look at it again. But you know what you're offloading was all in your brain.
Yeah.
You know, and it just helps. Like I always say to my clients, it's that heaviness in the mind that makes them heavy in their body. So when we write things down or when we talk to a therapist like yourself or a coach like me or a dietitian, you know, you're offloading all that heaviness.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, when you stop focusing on that number on the scale, it starts to move in the right direction.
Yeah. No, I hear that. I think that's beautiful, just the self-care and giving yourself that time to do that. And from my own experience, I know things like doing things for myself and self-care, it can be that real reflective moment that you that gives you insight into things and you're just like, oh, I didn't realize I did this or this or this. So we're constantly learning and growing. And just to add to that is if you notice yourself falling down, that's okay. No one's perfect here. And it's okay to get back up and learn from that. Just keep taking these learnings away.
Isn't that how we grow? Yeah. Don't you feel that the more setbacks that we get, the more we learn, the more we grow. Whereas if you have like a steady line of you're just doing wonderfully well, you're actually not going to learn very much in that process. So that's why I always say it's the weight loss journey. It's not just weight loss surgery. It's a journey that's involved in it. It's part of the process.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was at a talk that Stephen Bartlett was doing yesterday and he was talking about failure and he was saying that he has an employee that focuses just on failure and how the business can make failures. And I was just like, this is so interesting because there's so many of us that hide and try and almost like disconnect from the, I'd never want to fail. I never want to fail. But that's actually where all our growth and understanding our shadows and making sense of things that are lurking around in our subconscious, that's where it all comes up. And sometimes if we keep trying to avoid this, I don't want to fail. Are you really living to your truest, your authentic self? Because there's this like restriction of I don't want that, but actually we need to embrace it. We need to learn to embrace it.
It's like when we first met on that entrepreneurship journey, it's like, you know, we've got to stop having that fixed mindset.
Yeah,
and we've got to have that growth mindset, which is all about failing and learning. And it's not a straight incline, it's steps, and then we might even sort of fall whilst we're on this journey, but this is how we learn.
And it's interesting because failure, when I hear the word failure and when I work with people and even through my own experience, the word failure is more about what are other people going to be thinking. It's not about how you feel about yourself. It's more about, oh God, others are going to judge me now. Others are going to see me in this way. And it's like, hang on, why are we giving so much to what others think? We're here to live life. It's so temporary. And we're so focused on other people. And there's that study, wasn't there, that was done. I've forgotten the author's name. I have a book though in my bookshelf. And she did a study where she sat with people who were essentially dying. And she spoke to them about what are the 5 regrets that you have of life. And she goes through these different 5 different reasons. And one of them were like, I cared so much about what people were thinking. And I just think we give so much focus to that. And it's like, in the end, why are we doing that?
I know, but with age comes so much, right? As we grow older, we learn so much. And, you know, and it's a journey. It really is a journey. But like I, you know, just the women that I work with, is they don't really understand it's a journey because everyone's looking for that quick fix.
Before we end, I just want to ask you a question, which I ask everyone at the end of a podcast. And that is, do you think that life is fair?
Absolutely not.
You can elaborate or you can leave it there.
I don't think it's fair, but I don't expect life to be fair. If life was fair and we thought everything that happened was fair, it's like we've got no emotion attached to it. Whereas if we see it as, life can be unfair at times.
Yeah.
But isn't that part of the process of growth, the journey? When it's unfair, it's when things aren't going in the right direction. That means we need to change the route. It's like going to school, right? There's so many different routes to get to school when you're a child. And someone might find the fastest route, someone might go the longest route, but it all depends on what their focus is. Someone might be late going to school and find the 5-minute route. Someone that's got time and wants to chill out and listen to some music, they might take the 15-minute rule.
Yeah, yeah.
What's, you know, so it's, I think life can be unfair. But I think it's because of the processes of what we need to learn.
Thank you. I appreciate your answer. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And if you want to get in contact with Van, all of her details you can find underneath the podcast. And we will see you in the next episode. Thank you very much for your time here, Van.
Thank you, Lalita. And I look forward to your book.
Hey there. Are you ready to take your personal growth journey to the next level? I'm really excited to announce that my new online course is finally here. And in this course, we deep dive into topics we explore on this podcast, but with even more in-depth lessons, practical exercises, and personalized guidance. Don't miss out on this opportunity to invest in yourself and unlock your full potential. Enroll now and join me on this life-changing journey.